everyone. Did you miss me? I missed you. Yes, thank you, Mark. At least somebody missed me. I was like, come on now. Not everybody at once. I'll have you know that this time last week, I was on a motorbike in Nassau with my wife, and it was 77 degrees. So I'll go slow and hesitant and say that I missed you too. How about that? We had a good time. It was actually a very good time. And believe it or not, we mostly just rested and slept. And, you know, sometimes you don't know how much you just need to, like, sit and just kind of relax and not have any responsibilities. It's not like the first couple of times we went, we were like, oh, we want to do this and we want to see this. And we were like, man, I'm just going to sit and let this boat rock. And then I'm going to go upstairs and get something to eat. And we're going to go right back here and go to sleep. It was so much fun. And it was so warm. It was so, so warm. Anyway, first of all, welcome everybody here. I'm glad to be back. And I heard that Brad did an excellent job. I got a chance to listen to it. And I'm grateful that he was able to come and share as we've been continuing on our theme about what it means to be healthy, spiritually healthy. There are a lot of parallels between our physical health and our spiritual health. And so what we're seeking to do over the next handful of weeks is really discuss how we can make that connection, how we can really understand what it means to be healthy. And just like as, you know, we look around, there's a bunch of different people here, different ages, different, you know, backgrounds. Everybody's health is different. So what's healthy for me is totally different than what might be healthy for Trey or Mark or, you know, Miss Helen or somebody. Like, everybody's health is kind of different, right? And a lot of times, spiritually, it's very important that we don't get into this comparison game where we try to compare ourselves to another person. Like, well, this person, I need to measure up to be kind of like them because they're spiritually healthy. Well, what's spiritually healthy for them? It's totally different for the next man. But just like what's spiritually healthy for each person is different, each person has to be willing to ask themselves some hard questions when they go in for that doctor's appointment and look and see, okay, am I actually doing everything that I need to be doing to grow? Everything I need to be doing to be spiritually healthy? Because sometimes, and I know for myself, it can be easy to kind of, you know, slack off. But, you know, if as long as I'm healthier, as long as I appear to be stronger or maybe more fit than everybody else, then you feel good. But are you really as healthy as you could be? Are you really doing all that you can be? Because even if the next man or woman doesn't know, God knows, right? And so what we want to look at today is another aspect of being spiritually healthy. And that is training. What is training? What does it mean to train spiritually? And so the title is The Truth About Training. And I want to look at this from the standpoint of those who are training. Now, going back to our working definition of healthy, it talks about being free from disease or pain, being vigorous, showing physical, mental, or emotional well-being, beneficial to one's physical, mental, or emotional state. Those things that you do that are going to enhance all of those different aspects. And it can also be equated to prosperity. Okay? You know, we know what it's like to have an unhealthy bank account, right? Or a healthy bank account. Some of us are like, yeah, I know the unhealthy one, right? And so we look at this from the standpoint of health, and when we think about ourselves spiritually, we have to ask ourselves, am I as healthy as I can be? Because as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, it's very easy to be very black and white and look at things almost from the standpoint of, well, am I in God's will? Am I saved? But are you healthy? Are you growing? Are you something that is prospering? Are you something that is having a healthy effect on others? And so, starting again with this working definition of what it means to be healthy, there's a couple of verses I want to look at. In Hebrews chapter 12, says, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Therefore, strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees. Make level paths for your feet so that the lame may not be disabled, but rather healed. Here, he's talking about training. He's talking about doing something that, like we talked about with the gym is an optional thing. There's no requirement that anybody go down here to, you know, the New Planet Fitness or go to Club Fitness or go to Dover Gym and sign up. You don't have to do it. But you do this so that you can be stronger, right? You do this so that you can enhance your health and become more healthy. 1 Corinthians 9. In verse 24, starting there, it says, do you not know that in a race all runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like someone running aimlessly. I do not fight like a boxer beating the air. No, I strike a blow to my body and make it my slave so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. We see here it's talking about training and it's saying you don't just go out and say, okay, you know what? I need to get in shape. I need to lose 10, 15, 20 pounds or something. And so I'm just going to start doing stuff. No, you set a course. You do it in a very measured way. You do it in a calculated way, right? You know, those of us who have ever been athletes, if you've ever trained, if you've ever coached someone, you know that there's a certain regimen, there's a certain diet, there's certain things that you do, and you do it constantly. You push yourself because you don't want to be disqualified. You don't want to not be able to compete. You don't want to not be able to win. You don't just go out there and just say, hey, I'm going to read the Bible from cover to cover, starting in Genesis all the way to Revelation. Well, what is the purpose behind that? How is that going to enhance your spiritual health? Or I'm going to decide to go do X, Y, and Z. Well, why do you do it? You always have to have a plan. We talked about that whole, you know, failing to plan is planning to fail, something like that. Okay. Now, going back to this training thing, one of the things that I want to focus on today is what we call coaching or what we call mentoring or what, you know, there's different ways in which you can train, in which you can develop an athlete. And it, you know, same principles apply a lot of times in business or in any other thing, right? But it's very difficult to grow and to develop if you don't have someone to coach you, someone to bring you along, someone to push you, someone to challenge you, point out these weak spots, right? And when you think of coaching, think of sports naturally. And this guy, some of you guys recognize this guy, right? Lombardi, famous football coach. This guy, John Wooden, UCLA, right? Some of you North Carolina people recognize him. That's the Dean Smith, right? Okay, these are all legendary coaches, and what made them so effective as coaches was what they got out of their players. They got the most. They were known for getting the most out of their players. This guy, a little controversial, but I like him. Just don't stand next to any chairs with him. I don't know if he can still pick up a chair. This guy, very important to me. This is the famous Paul Brown, right? Browns, Cleveland Browns. They're not very good anymore. They probably need some help from him. But he originally was their coach. He started that franchise, and he also started the Cincinnati Bengals. And then you got this guy, Captain Hook, Sparky Anderson, right? The Big Red Machine. Come on, guys. Come on. I know you, some of you guys remember that, okay? And then there was this guy, Caroli, remember the gymnastics coach? All those champions, right? And then you had this lady right here, Pat Summitt. She gave a window into women's basketball. A lot of what we see now with women's sports is because she was such a pioneer. She was such a winner. She went from that whole, you know, that whole thing about punching like a girl. They kind of had lower expectations for women. Pat Summitt raised the bar. She got the most out of her players. And so when we think about what it means to train, what it means to have an effective coach, to have somebody who is effective at getting the most out of players, I want to look at this passage in Exodus chapter 18. It says, starting in verse 7, "So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and bowed down and kissed him. They greeted each other and then went into the tent. Moses told his father-in-law about everything the Lord had done to Pharaoh and the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and about all of the hardships they had met along the way, and how the Lord had saved them. Jethro was delighted to hear about all the good things the Lord had done for Israel in rescuing them from the hand of the Egyptians. He said, 'Praise be to the Lord who rescued you from the hand of the Egyptians and of Pharaoh, and who rescued the people from the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all other gods, for he did this to those who had treated Israel arrogantly.' Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and other sacrifices to God, and Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law in the presence of God. The next day, Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people, and they stood around him from morning till evening. When his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, 'What is this you are doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge while all these people stand around you from morning till evening?' Moses answered, 'Because the people come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and instructions.' Moses' father-in-law replied, What you are doing is not good. You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. Listen now to me, and I will give you some advice, and may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their disputes to him. Teach them his decrees and instructions and show them the way they are to live and how they are to behave, but select capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Have them serve as judges for the people at all times, but have them bring every difficult case to you. The simple cases they can decide themselves. That will make your load lighter because they will share it with you. If you do this and God so commands, you will be able to stand the strain, and all these people will go home satisfied." Moses listened to his father-in-law and did everything he said. See, what we see here in the example of Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, is what we've been talking about as far as training and coaching. See, no matter how great all those other coaches we were looking at, the Pat Summers, the Dean Smiths, you know, the John Woodens, no matter how great a coach they were, no matter how great a trainer they were, it's incumbent upon you, the athlete, you, the player, to do what? You have to listen. You have to be willing to receive it. You have to be willing to accept it. A major key in our spiritual development and our health is our willingness to bring people into our life to give us that input. Too often spiritually we think, well, this is between me and God alone, right? And I'm going to face this and I'm going to deal with this. And yet we have to ask ourselves, like going back to that passage where it talks about not beating the air, aimlessly going about this endeavor, do you have somebody to coach you? Do you have someone that's going to give input into your life? Do you make yourself available for such a thing? Because as much as we say we want to be healthy, like we talk about, you go to the doctor and the doctor says, hey, I notice your cholesterol levels, or I notice your heart rate, or I notice your blood pressure, or something's going on with your digestion. Are you willing to actually listen to do what it says? Like, I think about how on Wednesday nights when we have our Bible study here, 7 o'clock. Go ahead. Come on, everybody show up, right? And what's interesting is I remember for a while there we were getting a report from Kay about Leroy, right? And Leroy was doing this thing with his back, okay? Now, here's the thing. Kay would come in, and she'd kind of give this update, and, you know, it was almost like, hey, you know, things are going great. Leroy's doing better. But the thing I was always listening for and the thing I was always waiting for, she said, he's doing what the doctor is telling him to do. He is following the instructions that the doctor, he's doing the stretches. He's doing the exercises. See, Jethro told Moses the right thing to do. But if Moses doesn't listen, if Moses rejects, if he says, you know what, Moses, I'm not going to listen to you, then what good was it actually? How is that going to help in a very real way? Many of us want to be better spiritually, but we don't take the input that God is giving us. Matter of fact, we may not even have a Jethro in our life. You know, I mean, we have some actual Jethro Moses situations around here, and that, you know, Mark has the advantage of sitting 5 seats down from his father-in-law. So I guess there's a Jethro in a sense there. But the thing is, if George says, hey, I've got all this stuff in life that I can share with you, but Mark says, well, you know what? Thanks, Granddad. That's what he calls him. He says, thanks, Granddad, but no, I'm okay. Then how can he ever be more healthy spiritually? How can he ever grow? It's no different than, again, as athletes. If you're coach, and I used to coach. I used to coach track. I used to coach football. I used to coach baseball. It was tough because you get those knucklehead athletes who they just wanted to do what they wanted to do. They didn't want to practice. They didn't want to stretch. They didn't want to train. See, this is where we have to ask ourselves some very tough questions about ourselves spiritually, because it's easy to look at this example of Jethro and Moses because he's telling him something that's going to lighten the load. So Moses was like, hey, I'll try anything, right? Whatever you say, I'll take it to God, and as long as he approves it, we're going to do it. Now, this is a documentary. It was called Pumping Iron. I think I've talked about this in the past. This is Arnold Schwarzenegger, 1975. That's when I was born. Arnold Schwarzenegger had already competed for the Olympia 5 times in a row. He was the champion. This was going to be his 6th one. He was going to retire, right? And it was chronicled in this documentary because he was going up against this young up-and-coming guy named Lou Ferrigno. Now, Lou Ferrigno, many of us may know him because he was the Incredible Hulk. It was like my favorite show as a kid, right? You know, I just wanted to turn green once, right? I wasn't big enough. I wanted to turn green. And so they showed this documentary how each of them, Lou Ferrigno was bigger, he was younger, he had the better body, but there were certain things he didn't know how to do. He didn't know how to pose well. He didn't know how to package it and present it as well. One of the things that they noticed in the documentary was how Arnold would go with the other competitors, and they all trained in the same place, and they worked each other out, and they pushed each other. Lou Ferrigno chose to stay in New York. He didn't want to go to California. He wanted to train by himself. And so what you had was, and some of you probably remember this if you're Saturday Night Live fans, Hans and Franz, we're here to pump you up, right? It was pump you up. And so the thing was, they made a mockery of this, obviously, on Saturday Night Live. It was funny. But the fact is, Lou Ferrigno didn't want to do what was necessary. He didn't want to hear some of the hard stuff. He didn't want to get some of the details. See, one of the things that made Arnold great was he trained with other professionals who were competitive, and they told him where he had weaknesses. At one point during the documentary, Arnold Schwarzenegger says he had this goal that everything, because part of bodybuilding is to be symmetrical and everything fits. So you don't want to have giant legs and little itty-bitty chests or big shoulders and no legs. Like, you want everything to be symmetrical. That's so much of it. And he was willing to hear from others who were not on his level, who were not as great as he was, and he let them critique him. They had to tell him some hard things about how his legs were because he was deficient in his legs. Or he had to develop his chest in a certain way. And one of the things, it was a saying that he had, he said, having a workout partner can eliminate problems of progression, inconsistency, and lack of motivation. The challenge is finding the right one. The difficulty is finding the right person to train with you, the right person to push you. And so often spiritually, the difficulty for us is we have to ask ourselves, do we want somebody that's going to tell us the truth? Or do we want someone who's going to tell us what we want to hear? In 2 Samuel chapter 12, we see a situation that relates to this. Starting in verse 1, it says, the Lord sent Nathan to David. When he came to him, he said, there were two men in a certain town, one rich and the other poor. The rich man had a very large number of sheep and cattle, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb he had bought. He raised it, and it grew up with him and his children. It shared his food, drank from his cup, and even slept in his arms. That's like a little too close. I don't know if I want to share my cup with a lamb, even if it's a little ewe lamb. It was like a daughter to him. See, the point in this is how precious it was, this one little lamb, right? Now, a traveler came to the rich man, but the rich man refrained from taking one of his own sheep or cattle to prepare a meal for the traveler who had come to him. Instead, he took the ewe lamb that belonged to the poor man and prepared it for the one who had come to him. David burned with anger against the man and said to Nathan, as surely as the Lord lives, the man who did this must die. He must pay for the lamb four times over because he did such a thing and had no pity. Then Nathan said to David, you are the man. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I anointed you king over Israel, and I delivered you from the hand of Saul. I gave your master's house to you, and your master's wives into your arms. I gave you all Israel and Judah, and if all this had been too little, I would have given you even more. Why did you despise the word of the Lord by doing what is evil in his eyes? You struck down Uriah the Hittite with the sword and took his wife to be your own. You killed him with the sword of the Ammonites. Now, therefore, the sword will never depart from your house because you despised me and took the wife of Uriah, the Hittite, to be your own. This is a very harsh, difficult topic for Nathan to broach. He took great risk to come at him and tell him the truth. And yet, for those of us who know the story, David would be sorrowful. He would see, after self-examination, that he was wrong, that he needed to be challenged in this way. He needed to be told the truth. So many times we are going the wrong way. We're doing things that are corrosive to our spiritual health, things that are affecting us, things that are challenging, making our marriages hard, making our relationship with our children hard, making our relationships at work hard. We're doing things, self-inflicted wounds. It's kind of like whenever you work out in a gym and you're doing weight resistance, the reason why you have a trainer, the reason why you have a spotter is not necessarily so they can help you lift the weight, but it's so that they can correct your form. It's so that they can point out where maybe you're crooked, you're leaning, you're cheating, you're tilting. When you're playing baseball, you're a pitcher, you have a pitching coach to correct your delivery. Quarterback coach, correct your delivery. I used to run hurdles. Okay? It's not jumping hurdles, it's running hurdles, right? Track people understand that. And the thing is, I had a coach who would help me so that I would understand how I was approaching the hurdle, not just how I was going over the hurdle as I was in my stride. You need other people, but they have to tell you the truth. You have to be willing to be around people who are going to tell you the truth, even when the truth is you're messing up. You're not glorifying God. You're actually making it hard to have a relationship with God. You're making it hard for God to be able to use you, not only for yourself and for your family, but to help other people. Nathan, at great risk, told David the hard truth. And the question we have to ask ourselves, are we that brave to be like Nathan and tell our brother or our sister the truth? Are we brave enough? Do we have enough faith? Are we courageous enough in our faith to tell somebody the truth? And part two of that is, are you willing to listen? See, David was willing to listen. He would suffer the consequences in many ways, but he was willing to listen. And just like that great coach, just like having that trainer, that spotter, that person to observe, are you willing to listen? So much of our spiritual health is just like going to the doctor. If he puts you on a statin, he puts you on something for your cholesterol, and you never take it, how will you ever get better? If he tells you you need to exercise, you need to walk a mile or half a mile a day, but you never do it, you never get started, how will you ever get healthy? Are we willing to put people in our lives, approach people and say, hey, I need a coach, I need help, I need someone to tell me the truth, and are we willing to follow through and listen? Now, some of you guys remember this show from the 60s, right? Batman? Yes, I know, it's hard to see, but that's Batman. That's the original Batman TV show, the Adam West and Burt Ward, and you got Caesar Romero and all those different characters, right? And this guy, the Penguin, we've talked about him in the past. This is Burgess Meredith. Burgess Meredith would become even more famous by playing Mickey, who was the trainer of Rocky in the Rocky series. And it was interesting because I think of him a lot of times as a trainer, as a coach, and someone who was trying to instill these things into Rocky, because one of the harsh truths he had to tell Rocky in Rocky I, he said, you're a bum. He said, you're a bum. And you're a bum because you have the talent and you have the skills and you have everything it takes to be a great fighter, but you've settled for this mediocrity. You've settled for just being an average to okay boxer. That's why I don't give you any attention. That's why I don't train you. That's why I don't look to you to do anything. See, it was a harsh thing because Rocky was offended. He was upset. But Mickey had to tell him the truth. You've been hanging around here for 10 years, and you've never even attempted to go higher to achieve the greatness that is in you. Now, this guy, his name is Jeff Long. Call him Box, right? Box is about, they call him Box because he's like 5'7", 5'8". This guy, I met him when I was in Atlanta. He was a champion bodybuilder, and he trained me. And the way he trained me was, instead of actually taking me through workouts and training me and critiquing me, he had me to go through and work out with him. I had to get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning, eat, and meet him and train. This is him signing some autographs. And I remember Box telling me, he said, Craig, he's retired Army, called me by my last name. He says, Craig, he's like, you got everything that a bodybuilder wants and needs, but you don't like to eat right. He said, you don't like to eat right. And he said, it's not even that you eat bad. You don't eat enough. Why are you afraid to eat? Was somebody in your family obese? Did you have this problem? Why are you afraid to put on weight? And the truth of the matter was, he got right to the heart of the issue. He knew exactly what he was saying. He was a professor. He'd been doing this for years. He said, something is wrong because you should be growing. You work out with everybody. You work out with the best of them. You train with the best of them. Your cardio, everything is right, but you don't like to eat. He told me the truth about why it is that I wasn't growing. Do you have somebody that's willing to tell you the truth about why you haven't grown? Like Rocky, it's been 10 years, 15 years, and you haven't gotten any healthier. Do you have somebody that's willing to tell you the truth? Acts chapter 9, we'll finish it here. Starting in verse 23, it says, after many days had gone by, there was a conspiracy. Wow. Somehow that just didn't look the same as when I read it earlier. There was a conspiracy among the Jews to kill him, but Saul learned of their plan. Day and night they kept close watch on the city gates in order to kill him. But his followers took him by night and lowered him in a basket through an opening in the wall. When he came to Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples, but they were all afraid of him, not believing that he really was a disciple. But Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles. He told them how Saul on his journey had seen the Lord and that the Lord had spoken to him, and how in Damascus he had preached fearlessly in the name of Jesus. So Saul stayed with them and moved about freely in Jerusalem, speaking boldly in the name of the Lord. He talked and debated with the Hellenistic Jews, but they tried to kill him. When the believers learned of this, they took him down to Caesarea and sent him off to Tarsus. Then the church throughout Judea, Galilee, and Samaria enjoyed a time of peace and was strengthened, living in the fear of the Lord and encouraged by the Holy Spirit and increased in numbers. What we see here is that Paul was having a bit of a difficult time, right? He was literally running for his life, and for good reason in many ways, because he had been one of the people who was most against, showed the most hatred and the most disdain for the church. But when he repented, he didn't have anybody. He didn't have the Jews anymore, because now they wanted to kill him. And he had a whole bunch of people, the entire church, that was afraid of him. And it took Barnabas to step up and fill in the gap. It took Barnabas to have his back. It took Barnabas to take him under his wing and say, no, I'm vouching for him. He's okay. The question that I have is, who are you training? Who are you taking up under your wing? Who are you coaching? Who are you developing? Who are you saying, I'm going to work with this person who's not quite there yet, who maybe there's some spiritual gaps. I'm going to work with this person and help them develop into the man or the woman of God that they could be. Do we invest in people in that way? Do we give to people in that way? Do we see ourselves as Christ followers? Do we see ourselves as those that it is necessary that not only do I get healthy, but that I help others to get healthy and grow spiritually as well? I want to close here with a few questions. Number one, do you make yourself available to be coached spiritually? Who do you consider your spiritual advisor? And more importantly than anything, is it working? You know, sometimes you have coaching changes in different sports. You'll have people to say, okay, I've been training with this person. I've gotten as much as I can get. Now I need to spend some time getting trained somewhere else. But are you making yourself available to be coached? Do you show up to be coached? Or do you just show up because it's the appointed time? Do you come together with your brothers and sisters with an attitude that I want to be trained, I want to be better, I'm willing to listen and take the advice, I'm willing to be pointed in a spiritual direction, or are you just showing up? Do you listen to credible people or only to people in your comfort zone? Are you seeking approval or answers? Because there's a very big difference between I'm seeking validation, I'm seeking approval, and I want somebody to tell me that I'm okay, and I want somebody to point out, like Arnold said, where are my weak spots? Where can I continue to grow? Because the comfort zone, you know, it's nice there because nobody's going to tell you that eating that donut was a bad thing, right? Because they're eating donuts too. But that's in the comfort zone. In the place where people are healthy and growing and thriving and helping others to be healthy, they are also saying, no, I'm tempted with donuts too. I like my sugary sweets too. I like the high carbs. I like these things that are not necessarily good for me too. But I'm willing to compete. I'm willing to fight for the prize. Are you willing to listen to people who are going to tell you the truth, or just those people who are going to make you feel good about where you are and who you are? Is your spiritual health improving? Is it getting worse? Are you content to remain in the same place you are today, or do you want to be healthier, stronger, and fit? What are you willing to change? We have to ask ourselves this continually. What are we willing to do to be our best? What limits do we put on being our best? Because sometimes we can get so private in our walk with God that we're not willing to be pushed. We're not willing to be trained. We're not willing to be told, you have to stop doing this. You have to change this. Your thinking is wrong. Let me show you this. Because we say, well, no, that's between me and the Lord. It's none of your business. But just like if you're going to be a competitive athlete, you can't be like everybody else. The same way it is for us as Christians, those who are following Christ. We can't just say, well, this is what everybody else does, because we're not like everybody else. We're in the world, but we're not of it. Are you willing to change those things that are bad for you to be healthier? And finally, who are you currently coaching into a champion? Do you share truth with others, or are you only concerned about your own health? You know, a lot of times, being in the ministry, I will prepare things, lessons, different, you know, scriptures I'll be reading, I'll be doing research, and it'll be focused, and in mind, I'll have in mind the things that are going on with other people, different parts of the church. And yet, I have to make sure that I make enough time to take care of myself, kind of like what Box was telling me. I can't just cook food and eat for everybody else. I have to eat for myself, too. But the reverse is also true. We can't just sit down and say, well, I spent time with the Lord, and I read my Bible, and I prayed, and it was all about me and me and me and me and me. But what about taking the time to be interested in how you can help enhance another person's spiritual health, how you can coach someone else, how you can be there? See, part of the reason why I wanted to start having children's church is not because we wanted to See, it's kind of like getting back on a bicycle, you know. You take a week off and you think you're just going to jump on there and, you know, it didn't work. So what happens is, it's not that we want to drastically change how we function as a church on Sunday, but we have to consider, how are the kids developing spiritually? What are they getting from this time of worship? How could it be enhanced? How could they be healthier? How could they even make us spiritually healthier if they have a time of worship together downstairs? They get the same half hour, 35 minutes that we get to be on their level. Or when we do certain things, do we do it just because it fits our need? We talked about this in Sunday school this morning, about how we have to be concerned about not just what meets our comfort zone, what is in our culture and our DNA and the things that we like, but how is this going to affect the spiritual health of others around us? What are we willing to do to be healthier spiritually? What are we willing to do to make our marriage greater, but not just our marriage, but to be involved, to open up, to share, so that other people can have healthier marriages? So that other people can have healthier children, so that other people can grow in different ways. See, this is what we see throughout the scriptures. This is what Jesus was trying to get his followers to understand. It's not just about you. You have to be willing to take some hits. You have to be willing to hear some hard things if you're going to train, if you're going to be a champion, if you're going to be a champion for God. Do you want to be a champion for God? Are you willing to say, I'm going to make those changes? Do you need the prayers of the church? We're going to have a song here in just a minute, and I'm inviting anyone. You want to come forward? Ask for the prayers of the church. Ask for help. Say, I need a coach. I need a mentor. I need somebody who's going to invest in me and help me to grow spiritually. Help me to be healthy. Help me to see those things that are affecting me spiritually. We ask you to come forward now. If you've never made a commitment to following Jesus, if you've never made this a part of your life, and you want that because you're tired of being spiritually sick, you're tired of not having the answer, we ask you to come forward. We want to help. We want to be there to guide and assist in whatever ways we can, through God's help, to help you be a healthier person spiritually. But it is not something we can do alone. This walk, this relationship with God that we're trying to develop, this walk, we can't do it alone. That's why we have the church. That's why we're supposed to have one another as believers. Are you willing to get the help and seek the help and adhere to what it is that God is bringing If you like prayers, if you'd like to come forward and ask for anything, please come forward as we stand and sing our song of invitation.